Looks like it's just you and me so far.
I don't know what will happen today, even though it's 5 minutes after the time.
Yeah, no, it's late today. I guess it's one of those more spaced out days.
Maybe because of this Varaha appearance day celebration.
Oh, okay, so there's celebrations going on. Okay.
Can be like this. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, what to do? Otherwise, we can just start talking. It's just you and me.
Nice. I love
That anybody else wants to join, they can, and
that.
you can ask questions, whatever you like, and
Yeah, maybe yes, because today we were reading the Srimad Bhagavatam about the Varaha appearance. It's very funny that the many sages and demigods, they were very questioned if it's really Vishnu or not, what has happened with the Varaha. Then even Lord Brahma, in the first moment, he didn't know it. It's Vishnu or not, then why was Varaha arranged in such a way that they were a little surprised?
yeah, I mean, it's always the fun because it's like for us, there's always the element that we want to be recognized, you know, and that people are dealing in a particular way. And then, you know, then we're comfortable. That's because, you know, the living entity is trying to establish their position. Well, for Krishna, he doesn't have to establish his position because whether people accept or not, it doesn't matter. Right? You know, in the material world, it's because people accept, then it has meaning or value. Just like, let's say, the flat money, right? It's because people accept it as money, therefore it works as money. Otherwise, it's just a piece of paper, a piece of plastic. Right? So that, or you have a whole bunch of people and they all appreciate, and then you are something great and they stop appreciating, then you're not something great, right? Because your greatness is in the relativity of everybody else. But for Krishna, he's the basis. He's non-dual. So there's no relativity connected to him. We're relative to him, but he's not relative to us. So therefore, then you have that element where he has fun, like hiding his position or different things like that, because whether the demigods accept him as God or not, he is God. Right? So he doesn't like that. Means so there's no on his side, there's never going to be a loss of that. There's no fear of that. There's no anything like that because he is the Lord, right? So there's not going to be some other element coming up. So for him, it'll be fun that they're bewildered and don't know if he's there and this and that. And then, you know, then at some point he'll reveal himself, and then oh, then they're so amazed, and you know, so it just becomes like part of the rasa. Because for Krishna, the interaction is about the rasa, that he is everything and he's in control of everything. That's not really significant rasa for him. For us, we consider it very big and special rasa. But for Krishna, no, because he is existence, right? He is action and reaction. He is the laws that all this is based on. While we're none of these, you know, we exist. We have qualities that we could do things, but our existence and our qualities are all in re a relationship to other things.
And it means it's the part of his renunciation.
Yeah, you could, yeah, that could be say renunciation. Yeah, because for Krishna, it's not, he has to prove himself or establish himself. If he does something to establish or prove, like the Krishna, I'm Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, that's only for the benefit of the devotee and for the others who are listening in there. But for himself, he's God, whether you accept it or not. Like before it was, I'm not sure who it was Nietzsche or one of them, God is dead, like that means, yeah, maybe in your mind, you don't care about God. He has no value, but that doesn't mean he's not there and still running things like that. So that kind of aspect or that kind of feature, then for him it's fun. I think it's also in the grammar. It's talking about an ending. I'm not sure what was the particular letter or situation of the letter, but it comes out silent. And so it was that Jiva Goswami is explaining is like Vishnu, he's there, he makes things work, but he's silent. You don't know he's there, but he's hidden, right? Or like Krishna says in grammar, then he's the double meaning, right? You have a word, it can mean two different things. So you can say it in one way and it means that, but at the same time, it means something else. It's like Krishna and the gopis, and the confidential cowherd boys, and they may be in an environment where there's elder gopis or other gopis or things like that. In other words, persons who you can't be confidential with. And so you can say something using words that mean one thing for that's appropriate for the environment they're in, but at the same time, the secondary meanings then mean about Krishna and the gopis and interacting with them and all that. So that aspect, it becomes hidden. So then he also is or that secondary meaning, yeah, it's not understood by others. So that also is a feature of Krishna, right? So that is, part of his personality is there and you don't know. So it's fun. Or like you'd see even in the on the the general mundane platform, I had heard that Louis, I think it's Louis the 14th, that at Versailles they used to, for fun on sometimes, I guess it would be summertime and like that, they go out into their lawns for a picnic, but they dress up as if they were village people, cowherds and stuff like that. Even though it's huge grounds and they have all the servants and all that, but they would dress up like that and go sit in the grass and have their meal and just act as if they were just ordinary village people like that. I think Vatsyayana also then points that out, that that's one of the interesting things of when cultured people, let's say they go out into the countryside for like that, just for an outing, or go down to the river or lake to swim, or go in with the family and have something to eat and just hang out for the day. One of the things that they would, one of the elements to make things interesting is they would talk in like village dialects, more of a rough, kind of rougher language, like the villagers would talk, and that's part of the taste, part of the fun. So, you'll have those kind of elements that you don't see, or like Brahma, right? He comes down to see, he's heard, oh, that Krishna has appeared. And he wants to come and see that when he comes, then Krishna's sitting with all the cowherd boys, and he's got a bunch of whatever it is, maybe that yogurt with the fruits or like that in his left hand, and eating and all that. And he's just sitting with the others. And Brahma is thinking, how can this kid be God? Right? So then he wants to test because he's not sure. Because it is Vrindavan and he knows about all this kind of scene, but there's no majesty. So then, he steals the cows and the calves and the boys. And then when he comes back, then Krishna, having expanded as those boys and calves, then he's going on and he thinks, what happened? Didn't I took all them? And he goes and backs and looks, in the cave where he kept everybody, and they're there and they're asleep. He's going, then where are all these? Like this and that. He's completely bewildered. Then, after he's completely bewildered, then Krishna then manifests all the coward boys and all the calves and all that as four-armed Vishnu forms. Then he understands, oh, okay, I'm messing with something beyond my ability here. So for Krishna, these things are fun, doing something unique, something different, because always the thing is very formal and all that. So that's the thing, the demigods are always used to formal, because the demigods see Krishna as Paramatma. That's their basic relationship with him. It'll be Bhagavan, but it'll be the Paramatma feature of Bhagavan, where he's God and all that. So the whole thing of majesty is based on him as Paramatma. So the Yadu dynasty, they would see him as Paramatma, the Supreme Lord and everything. So there's going to be that aspect that they don't know. So that's why when they made what was that, Gupta Vrindavan, and on the off of Dwarka on the land, the Vishwakarma made a Vrindavan, and he even made deities of Mother Yashoda and the cows, coward boys, different things like this, and they put cows out there and made it look so it was like Vrindavan. And then Krishna's coming there and he's interacting with Mother Yashoda and everything and all that. And he dresses up as a cowherd boy and all that, and all the Dwarkavasis, they're very attracted, he's so attractive in this feature. But that's because they only see him in that aspect of sweetness. So he can behave in that way. But you see in Dwarka, because there is sweetness, but it's mixed with majesty. So it's like, it would be like if you have majesty, but it has that element that it can be relaxed. It's just like, let's say you have some, dignitaries or big people in that, and they're coming into the assembly and all that. And they'll be, following all the etiquettes. Everyone's dealing very nicely and very formally, and that, like that. But now and again, they might be sitting there, and one of these, very senior persons might lean over to someone else and, make some joke or some, light comment that's not in that formal environment. So Dwarka will have that aspect that they can. There is that little bit of intimacy, so that they can. In the environment of majesty, they can manifest some of that sweetness or lightness that's there, So yeah, so you get that. But Vrindavan is because it's just about Krishna, the person, rather than this person is God. It has nothing to do with that. He can be God or not. It's like, who cares? It's not that there's any disrespect. It's that it's not the basis of their relationship. Like you see in the, generally the mundane environment, you meet somebody, you don't know who he is, and you deal with them just as you would an ordinary person. But then as someone that comes up to you and say, hey, do you know that this guy is this, big person that you know? Suddenly you change your mood, you're more respectful, you deal more nicely and everything like that. So that's the point, is that the whole of Vaikuntha, it's because he's God. That's the basis of their relationship, right? But in Vrindavan, it's just that's the pure manifestation of Bhagavan. So you could say as his personal feature, then it's the personal aspect of that. It means if you, because you have threes, and then you can take each one of those threes and divide that into three. So if you take the Bhagavan feature, and then that Bhagavan feature, then you divide that into Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Then you'll get that it's Bhagavan or Bhagavan. So that'll be Vrindavan, right? And then again, Vrindavan can be take that Bhagavan or Bhagavan and divide that into three. So you get the Shantaras, just appreciating his, just how he is everything and how wonderful he is, the person is so, all like that. So they just see the wonderfulness of it like that. Though it's in sweetness, but it's still it's that. And then the parental friendship and servitorship will be like the Paramatma feature, that'll have the mechanical aspects will be quite prominent, right? These are the cows and the trees and that, they're just appreciating. Krishna is appreciating them, they're appreciating him. But you see with the servitorship, friendship, and parental, then it's very much activity. You know, the activity base, you're doing something for Krishna, you know, and things like that. You know, it'll still have the sweetness, but it still has that kind of flavor because it's expanding from the samvit, right? The Shanta Rasa is expanding from Sandini. But then the conjugal Rasa, that's expanding from Hladini. So that's just about the flavor that's there. The activities are just supporting the flavor like that. And so then you could say that's Bhagavan of Bhagavan of Bhagavan. You know, the pastimes of Krishna and you know, and Radharani and a group like that. So you get these aspects, is that because it's about the flavor of interaction, and that has to be based on real personal dealings. So then the feature of that, you know, it has to be known he's God, is not important for that aspect. So for him, that's not the important aspect. It may be when you're like you're dealing with people that only respect because of that, you know, like the demons or something like that, and then you know he'll manifest these kind of things and that. Like I think when Duryodhana, when Krishna went as the messenger on behalf of Yudhishthira about the battle, that you know, to give some land, and then you know they'll peacefully just go in there. You know, just stay in their village and not bother the Kauravas. But then Duryodhana, just being, you know, the envious person he is, then he made a plan that they'll try to capture Krishna. So they made this special asan, you know, this throne, but it was built on some kind of thing that they could, a mechanical thing that you moved a switch or something, then the seat would go down into the earth. And then they could close, you know, so then they captured him and like that, because they're looking at it that the Pandava strength's coming from Krishna. So if they get rid of Krishna, then there's nothing. The demons think like that, you know. All the demigods, they have their power from Vishnu. So if we kill Vishnu, then they'll have no power and we can take over. So then he, you know, thinks he's very clever, and they, I don't know if in that, then Krishna went down with the seat, you know, into the ground, or if knowing what's happening, whatever. But then he, from what I remember in the story, then he goes, the seat, you know, is triggered. He goes down inside. Then, you know, it's a huge hall. Then slowly, place starts shaking like an earthquake, and then through the floor, you start seeing this peacock feather. You know, just poking its way up through the floor. Monster per peacock feather, not a little one, huge. And then comes up, and then Krishna, you know, manifests a partial form of universal form. Not as big as what Arjuna saw, you know, or Mother Jashoda, but, you know, a partial like that. And you know, just to show, you know, don't mess with the boss, you know. So, you know, he'll do that. And then it has some taste, because then, you know, they're completely in, you know, fear, and you know, they, what do you call it, the bhayanaka, that a gasoline, all these kind of things, you know, just freaking out, you know, because they don't accept his authority. So then they figure, okay, we don't mess around with this guy. So but you know, because of the illusion of Maya, they quickly forget and go back to their battle and stuff like that. And you know, so for Krishna, is that he said, and also as Paramatma, he's hiding in the heart. You know, he's not hiding, he's right there. But you can't, no, you won't see him unless you, by hearing from the guru, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and by performing devotional service, then you can appreciate Paramatma in the heart. Like that. So Krishna's like that, in every atom, between every atom, what makes everything function, you know, whatever it is that we appreciate, that's Krishna. You know, like you're cutting the vegetables, and so you're using the knife because the knife is sharp, it'll cut the vegetables. So the sharper the knife is, and the better the quality of the materials and how it's made, then the better it cuts. But that potency is Krishna. So the knife can be manufactured and maintained in such a way that it manifests that nature of the knife. And so Krishna's potency, to that degree, Krishna's potency will manifest in it. And so but we don't think of it like, we just say it's a great knife. It's a great knife and I take care of it, I sharpen it regular and keep it in this place so it doesn't get damaged and all these kind of things. But it's Krishna that's making what you appreciate of the knife is Krishna. Or that, let's say you can cut potatoes in one way, but cabbage cuts in a different way, and let's say a squash is different than that. So for what you want to do, let's say you want to do something with the potatoes, then that how you can cut it, and because of that, it holds its shape and it can do certain things. You appreciate that in a potato, but that quality is Krishna. That potato-ness, the potato-hood of the potato-ness that you're appreciating there, that's Krishna. That you can boil it, but it still has its shape. Because as soon as you boil cabbage, it completely goes, shrinks and loses all its water. But the potato just soaks up water. It doesn't lose any, so it just depending on what you want to do, then the different elements within in Krishna's energy, we appreciate them, and then we want to interact with them based on those qualities. So we think it's the potato, we think it's this or that, but in actuality, it's Krishna. That's the main thing. It's just Krishna. So that aspect is we're appreciating, right? And then of course you have the potatoes, and then to make them nice, you put the butter, and so the butteriness of the butteriness with the potatoes, we think it's just the butter and potatoes, but it's actually Krishna. And then we offer to Krishna, and then it because but in that feature, just that it is Krishna, that's in his Brahman feature, right? And then what can be done with that, that's the Paramatma. But then when you take that and now offer it to Krishna, then it takes on his Bhagavan feature, that Krishna has tasted this and everything. And so now you make that devotional advancement. The other one you'll make definitely spiritual advancement, but this way then you make the devotional advancement because you're seeing it in relationship to Bhagavan. So that's why it's the most powerful that chanting the holy name and that then seeing it as the Bhagavan, aspect that it's non-different from Krishna, then and the devotional activities, that's why it's the most powerful and quickest of all the processes. It's more powerful than karma and jnana. That they have potency and effectiveness, but that's because Krishna has given them that potency and effectiveness. But they still work within a limited range. They're still in relationship to your qualifications and how much effort you put in and everything, then you get that much result. But then when you're dealing on the Bhagavan level, and that then when you perform a devotional activity, then it the because we're small and he's great. Right? So because it's a relationship to him, then you can get these immense results and advancement in devotional life and experience and Krishna consciousness and all that, because you're dealing with Krishna like that. The other ones can deal with the unlimited feature of the Lord, the control of the Lord, which is very great. It's unlimited, but it still doesn't have the taste for the living entity, that the Bhagavan feature will have. So in the spiritual world, then it's all about Bhagavan, but you'll see the Shantaras, it'll be more about the Brahman, appreciating the Brahman feature and qualities of the person. In Bhagavan, then in Paramatma, about how the person is, controls everything, he's God, everything works by his order and everything. And then the Bhagavan feature, as Bhagavan, then it's just he, the person, you know. So that's why Krishna in the chapter Shloki is making that connection, that point that he is everything, he's the value in everything, so Brahman and Paramatma. But he himself as an individual is beyond that. So Bhagavan is beyond. So that's the point that you're trying to get to. You know, that you want to be able to appreciate that he is beyond that. So you're trying to, so everything that you see, that the existence of everything, the control of everything, but it's actually Krishna's Bhagavan is the basis of that. So everything should bring you back to Bhagavan. And then Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. And then of Bhagavan, then Krishna is the of all the features, then Krishna is the topmost, and of that then in Braj. Right? So you have Dwarka, which is perfect, Mathura is more perfect, and Vrindavan is most perfect. So that's the uniqueness of Goloka, is that the pastimes there and that are connected with Krishna, you know, so the human pastimes. While the Vaikuntha aspect is then is him as God pastimes. Like that. So, yeah.
Yes, Maharaj. Can I have more one question? I was
Okay.
reading that Krishna is incarnating in all the features like the 8,400,000
Yes.
species. And
Yes.
generally, what is the reason for, I don't know, to incarnate like spider or something like this when these animals just don't have any, how to say, open possibility to make this some progress in spiritual life or something.
Yes, well, because in here is that all these living entities, 8,400,000, all those are, you know, for the living entity to eventually come back around to become Krishna conscious. So, like you're saying, is they don't have a direct connection, so only the human forms have. And of the human forms, technically only the civilized really have the dynamic position. But technically any human can have some benefit. So, but these others are indirect because by going through all those, you get all these impressions. And, you know, all these impressions build up, and after a while, you start having doubts about the material existence. Right? Because if you've gone through 8,400,000 species and tried to become the controller and enjoyer in each one of them, and that's all there is, then you start to have doubts on, well, then who am I? What is this place? Why am I here? What's, you know, all these aspects. That then someone takes up the pursuit of spiritual life. So in this, then you, it means, like you said, gave you example of a spider, but a spider has a nature, right? So it's not just that it has eight legs, but it also acts in a particular way, how they deal and everything like that, you know, and so then the nature of that, then the potency of that's coming from Krishna. So Krishna then goes and enacts a pastime, you know, in each one of these species so that the actual nature of everything is coming from him. You know, it's like we see when he's in Dwarka, he's getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, you know, and then doing his meditation and his yajnas and giving in charity and then going to, you know, going to court, you know, like the king would do, and then he's spending time with the family and, you know, doing all the things in the right time as a human being should, you know. So in that way he sets the example of what's, you know, proper spiderness like that. So for us, because Bhagavatam is just getting to the essence, so it's only showing those forms and those pastimes that's going to be very comfortable for us and very relatable for us to see in relationship to how to become Krishna conscious. But the Puranic literature will be having the pastimes of all 8,400,000 species that Krishna incarnates in. Like that. But for us, it's not necessary. Like for that, for what I understand in this feature, then Yamaraj has the full Puranic histories on these, because he's constantly doing putting all these living entities in these species. This way, he can remember Krishna. He's putting someone into a spider body, but he can remember Krishna, how Krishna performed his pastime as a spider. So he remains Krishna conscious, while the other person gets the results of their karma. Like in the Nrisinga Purana, then it has a very short, like one paragraph, pastime of Krishna as a mosquito. Right? So Krishna incarnates as the mosquito, and I'm not sure what he's doing, if he's flying or if he's sitting on something on a plant, and all the demigods, then they take forms of bees, and then they fly around him, circumambulating, while he's there. But the pastime, it seems, what's explained is like 5 minutes, like that, and maybe more, but whatever it is, that's all that then that's all that explains about the whole pastime. And then after that, that's the end of the pastime. So that way, then one can remember Krishna and everything, and also everything has its nature in Krishna. So that way, then you can, just it's one is everything functions. There's the consistency. That's why you see all the living entities, everything. It functions in a consistency. So you see is that all the 8 million, they follow the laws of nature nicely, right? They don't go outside of them. So all those 8 million do what they do. And you see is that the harmony between all of them, it works, right? They go on, and everything goes on nicely. And sometimes one group of animals becomes more, and then it's too much, then they'll become less, and another one becomes more, and there's more water, there's more fish, and then the water gets less, there's less fish, and all these different things go on, but it's going in a cycle. But then, so the human then has that point to make that the choice to whether he wants to follow the laws or not. So the ones that follow, then you see they fit into this universal harmony very nicely. And those who decide not to, then they're a trouble, they're a problem. Like that. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Hi. Tiny tie. So, Mataji, you had something?
Maharaj, I had this one question about this connection to Bhagavan aspect. I was just thinking this morning that there are some events in my life that I don't know how to connect to this aspect, that I try to make some endeavor, which my intention was I want to be service to Krishna as Bhagavan aspect. I try to, but the result, there was no good result at the end. After so much endeavor, there was no good result to offer to Krishna as a Bhagavan. And then I realized that from such events, I can only get realizations like, okay, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not all these bad things happening, or that I'm, the world is suffering. But I don't know how to connect this to the Bhagavan aspect. I don't know why this happened.
Right.
Okay.
See, okay. See, the thing is that there's a situation, there's the existence of everything. So that's Krishna's Brahman feature. Then there's the laws governing the existence of those things and the qualities of those things. That's Paramatma feature. Right, so the mechanics of things. So there's the existence and knowledge of the things. There's the mechanics of the things. So then, you're trying to apply those to please Krishna. Right, you want to get a result for Krishna. So the point is that you're doing that activity to please Krishna, the person. See, that's going to be the difference in the how do I feel it? 18, I think 1 in Bhagavad Gita. Where Krishna is talking about that performing action, it means, in other words, in the field, that you're performing action for results, right? So there's two approaches to that. One is what you just described, where in this particular field, I have this ability to take part in the action within that field. And I get a result from that, and then I offer that result to Krishna. Right? But then he mentions the second approach is that you see is that I'm just doing that activity for Krishna. rather than I in this situation, I'm doing this activity, I get a result, then I give it to Krishna. That's called renunciation. Sannyas is called that this situation, this service can be done to please Krishna. So even before you've started the activity, it's already for Krishna. So you don't have to wait for the result to give it to Krishna. You're doing the activity, that would give a result for Krishna. Does that make sense? So, like you said, is that when you're dealing with the Brahman and Paramatma features, then yes, this brings out the spirituality. You can see the difference between the spiritual and material. So the knowledge and detachment aspects come out. Though it may be based on seeing, appreciating, some element of beauty in the material nature, element of power, element of wealth. What is it? What do you call it? Wealth, beauty, power.
Knowledge.
No, yeah, the knowledge,
Renunciate.
renunciation, but there's still one more.
Strength.
Strength. Okay. Yes, strength. Like that. It's always when you have a list, one of them you forget. And even if you start with that one, you'll forget a different one. Right? So then strength, because there's something like the ocean is so powerful, the ocean is so vast. All these things is that these are features of Krishna's of the Brahman feature of Krishna. But the point is those are coming from the person. The person has those qualities. And then the Brahman is simply the effulgence of those qualities. And so that pervades everything. And so depending upon the particular situation or combination of the elements, then they can give rise to showing particular potencies, opulences. Does that make sense? Means you have something, you put something together in one way, and certain things can be appreciated. You put it together in another way, then some other aspect will be appreciated. Right? Means you take the earth, water, fire, air, ether, and put it together as a tree, then you can appreciate certain qualities. But if you put those together as a lake, it'll be different qualities you'll appreciate. But it's all based on Krishna's qualities. So those kind of views, like you said, that will bring about more the spiritual view and understanding. But you do see in Shanta Ras, they do see it that's the person that is the quality of the tree or the lake or the mountain, or the ocean. So they connect it all the way back to Krishna, that it's his potency that is manifesting all that, his beauty, his strength, his wealth, his fame. Does that make sense? So that aspect so it's just a matter of if we're seeing it on its own as Brahman Paramatma, it's a feature of Krishna, but it's more emphasis on that, or it's about how the person is having this thing. Then it goes to the person. So then these things just become a reminder of Krishna. So one doesn't, it's not that it's seen from the point, it just stops at that point. Like you see, is that the gopis will see the Tamal tree, and because of its color, that darkish color, then they'll remind you of Krishna, and immediately they're thinking of Krishna and how wonderful he is. Right? So the tree in its blackish color is beautiful, and then they just think of Krishna's beauty. So they don't have to go through all these spiritual steps, they just immediately are dealing with the Bhagavan feature. Right? So it's just a matter of always connecting everything with Krishna, and then everything one develops, one's mind becomes purified. Like we were discussing the other day on the aspects of the karma, is that they're going to that when you take up the chanting of the holy name, all that previous karma and all that's burnt away. Right? That's just gone. Just one chanting and just association of devotees taking darshan of the deities. It's just, they just go because they're not a big thing. It's just, It's just the impressions that are there from one's material experiences. So they're not very significant. So that's all gone. But what's still there is the mind is covered with impurities, right? That's so chaito dharpa namarjanam. Now you're cleansing the mirror of the mind, right? Does that make sense? Because the other things, the karma is just there, what's existing there in the past. So that's removed and that's fine. But the point is that the main thing is that us as an individual, that we're making a determination that we want to do things in connection with Krishna. So by doing that, we're cleaning the mind, or, the mirror of the mind. And why the mirror? Because when the mirror is clean, it will reflect nicely Krishna's qualities. Because that's all that's going on, is that Krishna's qualities, it's unlimited variety of qualities are pervading everywhere. And depending upon the particular individual and the situation they're in, then they'll reflect those particular qualities. And that's what makes the niceness. Does that make sense? So you'll attribute it to there, like, to the mirror, you'll attribute that there's a reflection in the mirror. But factually, the mirror is just reflecting the actual substance. So Krishna is the substance. Right? So yeah. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of you
Yes.
continue with the process. So you're not getting result, but if it's, let's say, if it's your duty to perform those activities, even if you're not getting result, you continue with that. You use the intelligence how to make adjustments that we could possibly get a better result for Krishna, because we want to get the result for Krishna. But for Krishna, it's the devotion in which you're trying to get that result that's important. It's not necessarily the result that is as important to him as the devotion in which it's offered. Does that make sense? So we try to do something. So it may come out nice or not, but that doesn't matter. Like you see, Krishna, then Nanda Baba is saying to bring his wooden shoes. So Krishna is going and trying to carry them on his head and this and that. It's not that he's doing this, gold medal Olympic job of it. You see, he's a little, he's a very small child, but just that attempt is what is so endearing to the devotees. Right? That's the point, is that they're trying, or like to tell him to lift a pot. Mother shows him to lift this pot and he can't. It's too big. So he just kind of puts his hands like this, goes like that. And just that makes everybody happy. So the point is that we're trying our best according to our duties to do that for Krishna. And how good it is, then means that Krishna's pleased with it. But the point is the devotee is always trying to increase Krishna's pleasure, so they're always trying to do it better. So if it's not quite working, they try to work it out so it does work better. Or if it is going nicely, they try to make it better than that, or continue that nice activity so it's consistent. So it's not that, oh, it doesn't matter, it's all this and that, so we can just sit back and do nothing. But then the point is that why would that be the conclusion if it doesn't, if it's not about the result, I don't have to endeavor for the result. No, it's that it's about the interaction, it's about the relationship, that rasa, but it needs something as a medium to use. It's just like, let's say friends, they want to do something, to spend some time together. They'll find things to do to spend time together. Right? The friends could just sit and talk, but they'll use talking as the medium, or they'll go and get something to eat and sit around and eat and do that, or go somewhere and see something, and then that becomes the medium. But what they're ex wanting to experience is the interaction between the individuals, right? And then you may have that there is these other things are going on, and that creates the variety. But it's about the interaction. It's not about the thing. You know what I'm saying? Going, you go somewhere. It's not about where you've gone. It's about going somewhere with these individuals. and doing something with these individuals. That's what's important. Does that make sense? So therefore, then one always, that's why then there's the importance in the Vedic system is on what are your duties. Do those duties. So even if you're not getting the result, you continue doing that. Like the Pandavas, they don't have a kingdom, they don't have anything, but they still do Kshatriya stuff. Right? Their view on what they do and all that still based on being Kshatriya and stuff. They don't have to run court, they don't have to do this. So they just stick to all the Brahminical elements that a Kshatriya does. Right? Because in the ashram, aspect, it's all about Brahminical activities. Right? And then in the Varna, it's all based on the Brahminical knowledge and everything like that. And it's just then whether it's just the knowledge of that being applied or trying to, making profit off of that or the skill, the mechanics that's used and all that. So the point is then they just do the simple things. So they take their bath and they do their yajnas and give in charity and, do those kind of things like that, hear from the Brahmins. While they're there in the forest for 12 years. And so then, that's what they do. So, but it's still, it, but you could say it's, oh, but they're getting no results. And it says, no, but they're performing their duties. And so whatever result comes from that, the performance of duties, that's the point. It's not about the result gained. It's about the performance of the duties in the nice way so that one is endeavoring to get good results, or you're getting good results to try to maintain that. And it's always up and down, material world as it is. So sometimes you're getting good, sometimes not. Sometimes it's easier, sometimes harder. So like that, that's why it's important. What are your duties? Because if you're doing something that's not your duty and you're not getting the result, that could be, you could look at it that if I don't need to do this, then I shouldn't be doing this activity, right? Because it's not mine, right? If you go there and try to do something and help and it goes well, okay, you can help, if it's needed, like it's an emergency or something. But if it's not, then why would you do? That's the importance of the Vedic system, because mode of goodness is doing your duties because they should be done. Mode of passion is doing my duties because I get a particular benefit from it. The Vedic is you do your duties, and then you see, like Sudama Vipra, he's performing his Brahminical duties. He's not getting a whole lot. Right? But he's still doing them anyway. Right? So because he's doing everything for Krishna, then you see at some point then Krishna reciprocates. But it's about the exchange between your endeavor and Krishna appreciating that endeavor. That's the main point. And then there is a medium that you're using. So whatever your duties are, that's the medium that you use for serving Krishna. Is that okay? So then the point is that it all in that way it all connects to Krishna. Yeah.
You very much. This one's
Okay.
thank
Uh-huh. Hare Krishna. Yes, G.
So what would be Maharaj still a little, could you a little define the paramedical aspects of the Kshatriya in ISKCON while not being directly involved to any management?
Means it's because you see is that in the ashram aspect, then you're going to that the ashrams are all based on Brahminical, because the Vedic system is actually Brahminical culture, right? So therefore then the training is a brahmachari, the activities of a grihastha, just being a grihastha, the interactions and that, and the duties in the house and family, the vanaprastha, the duties, the sannyas, the duties, these are all Brahminical because they're all based on trying to understand Brahman, right? The basic things of, getting up in the, early morning, then cleanliness, then the particular sadhana that we're doing, like that study of the shastras, associating with the devotees, worshiping the deity, living in the dham. These things then become the prominent elements of it. And then in the others, that you have the knowledge of the Vedas, how to uplift yourself to God consciousness. If you're talking the varnas, then that's the Brahminical is for that purpose. Right? Then you have the kshatriyas, then they maintain the environment so that it's stable and steady, so that people can therefore engage in spiritual life to uplift themselves. And then the Vaishyas are making, the economics, that's what then becomes the basis of all the, trade and interaction with people, so that they have the facilities to maintain themselves. And then the labor class, then they have particular skills that are valuable in assisting the other three features. But it's all based around Brahminical, like that. That's the thing. If we separate it too much, that's the ordinary varnashram, because there's an identification with it. See, in Daiva varnashram, one doesn't identify with it, but that doesn't mean one doesn't know what the nature is and that you engage in appropriate activities. Right? In the varnashram, the person may identify as a kshatriya. In the Daiva varnashram, they know that I'm servant of Krishna, but my conditioned nature is that of a kshatriya, therefore I do kshatriya duties for Krishna. But I'm not this body, I'm not the kshatriya. That's why Lord Chaitanya, naham vipro na channarapatir napi vaishana. I'm not these varnas or ashrams, but I have that nature, I'm in that position, so I do those duties for Krishna. Right? So that's then what you're one's trying to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, so then I'm just gonna try turning this through, balance this less. Little bit. No, about the same. Yeah, about the same. Yeah, so it's a matter of it. So, because the whole point is, it's about the Krishna consciousness. It's about the consciousness. It means that you're performing the duty, but the duty is the medium. Just like, let's say, you're cooking for the deities. So it's about serving the deities and about rendering, various forms of expression of devotion towards the deities. And so then the Pancharatra then defines. Describes all these different ways you can do that. And so then one of them is going to be making offerings to the deity, right? So many times a day you cook, and then different times a day, because it's about Krishna, what he likes to eat at what time of day and everything like that. And so then you're doing that. But if you just get into just the cooking and the kitchen and all these things, and then forget that it's about for Krishna, then one's come to the secondary, the religious aspect, and one's missed out on the actual transcendental, the devotional understanding. So one always has to see is that the religious aspect is always in support of the primary or the devotional, so that one is cooking for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But your devotion is expressed through the cooking. So you try to cook nicely for Krishna, do nice things for Krishna, make a nice variety, and make it looks very nice, it presented nicely, it tastes very nice, the aroma is nice, it's got the proper temperature and different things like this. So you try to make all those arrangements. Those are ways in which one can express one's devotion, right? Because you have three features of Krishna. You have his existence. You have then the activity, and you have the results. But the point is that the so so I if I want to express my affection for Krishna, Therefore, I try to get results by performing particular activities to get that result in particular situations. Right? So it's always going to be in a situation, you perform an action that gets a result because you want to please Krishna. So it all goes together. It's just in a natural way. You see, the relationships are based on that principle of having activities as an intermediary. So there's always that aspect that through that activity, then you're going to express whatever it is that you want to express. That's the point. The businessman, he's doing everything, and if he gets profit, then he considers it's worthwhile. But now if he's doing his business and this and that, there's no profit, he'll say it's not good. Right? Or the Kshatriya, that there's proper discipline and everything, the people are being protected, people are going on and becoming God conscious, then he'll consider it's good. And if it's not, he'll make adjustments until it is. Or on a skill, someone that says a carpenter, so then he's making some furniture. So if he gets a finished, desk or table, then he'll consider that's proper. But if after working, for days and days, and that there's nothing left except for sawdust on the floor and little pieces of wood that have no connection to each other, then you'll say, well, that was a waste of time. So in the same way as that, the activities in Krishna consciousness, it should be about becoming Krishna conscious, improving one's Krishna consciousness. So you're doing the activity to do it nicely for Krishna, because it's for Krishna. You want to do it your best. And you use your intelligence, the mind intelligence, the body to perform the activity the best way possible, and always try to improve it. It gets better and better as you go, because it's for Krishna. So it all works out. If it's about devotional service, all the other features are all included. But if you just start with these other features, it doesn't mean Krishna consciousness is included, right? If you're working under authority, like say, like the new devotee, he doesn't know much about Krishna, and you've told him to wash the pots. So he's washing the pots. They are Krishna's pots in Krishna's kitchen. He's getting the devotional benefit. He doesn't necessarily fully understand it, but it works because it's connected with authority. But the idea is, with time, you become more and more conscious of this. So besides getting that basic development that you've done it for Krishna, you're actually having the mood of you wanting to do it for Krishna. So then that just adds to it.
What is the position of we could consider maybe here like Mayapur, everybody has the same culture, and at the best they even don't identify, they identify themselves as devotees, but still doing the service if it would go like that. But then, like yesterday, we met one nice lawyer just there in the campus. And yeah, they are like kind of a congregational beginners there. At the same time, her, occupation is what I mentioned, but their identification is more that they do that for doing the money and like that. What is their position related to the Daivivarnasam? Are they what are they in the Daivivarnasam then?
Yes, the point is there, if they're looking at that they're doing their occupational duties, according to their nature, that brings them the money, they can maintain themselves to be Krishna conscious, then that works, nicely in the Daiva Varnashram system. Right? It's when they identify with it and think, I am this, and I am the results, I am the abilities, I am I've created this environment, I've created all these offices. And so that's then where it's just Varnashram. But the daivas that you see, it's all, we made this nice facility so that we can perform our activities to get results for Krishna. That'll make the difference. Is Krishna the center of it or not? And then, and the beginning is Krishna is the center, but you focus on what you're doing and may have some identification with it, get the results, then give it to Krishna. Then, because you've given it to Krishna, everything else is connected. But then the higher stages, then you see is I'm just doing this to please Krishna. So even before the result is gained, you're doing everything to please Krishna.
So, like, still like to possible how Daivivarnasrama going like the same time? Are they like it?
It's the mentality. See, is that it would be like, let's just take an example of, let's say, someone is cooking, right? So that you cook this preparation using these ingredients in this recipe in these kind of pots or pans or, utensils with certain techniques, that would be the Varnashram. That I'm doing that to please Krishna, that's Daivavarnashram. So it's just a matter of the consciousness. So basically, nowadays, you could say a lot of it is on because there's not a distinction between the primary, which is the devotional service, the Daiva, and the religious, which is the Varnashram. Because our religion is Varnashram. People appreciate that or not, but that's what we're given. That's what Krishna's given. That's what, the Acharyas have given. And, Srila Prabhupada's given us. So, like that's what the Shastras talk about. That's for us is the religion. But the point of religion is to use it in the service of the Lord. Because religion just defines the nature of something. Like a dog acts like a dog. He's following the religious nature, the religious definition of a dog. Modern, they say, is religion is faith. But no, you can have faith in it. But the laws themselves are laws whether you have faith in them or not. So you follow them, you get a good result. You don't follow them, then you get a lesser result. So that's the point is that the difference between Varnashram and Daiva Varnashram is simply the consciousness. The difference between Varnashram and not following Varnashram is a matter of knowledge, and training. Because if you just do whatever you feel like, whenever you feel like, that's not Varnashram, that's an animal. Right? But now you can have a polished animal. A more fancy animal, but it's still an animal. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen where sometimes people get little outfits for their like their pet. So they get this little thing where it's kind of like a vest, and it's got sleeves on it in the front, and it's got like a suit and tie and everything, and you got a little dog, and he's walking along, and he looks like he's wearing a suit. Because the front legs, you think it's like his leg, the legs that would be like a man standing there. And, so he's just a fancier animal. He's still a dog, just a fancier one, or like a poodle. You take the poodle down to the groomer, and then they have a special poodle cut, where they leave a little pom pom at the end of their tail and at their feet and, and different things like that, and around the kind of main part of the body, like a kind of bit like a lion, and shave everything else. And, so they're a dog, but it looks more sophisticated, more refined. That's all. Doesn't shed. That's the poodles don't shed hair like the other dogs. So then, it's more refined. So that's all society is if there's not an understanding of God consciousness. So there's some understanding that, yes, we don't steal, we don't do this, we try to get along with each other and things like that, because that's what God said. Then you have that element, then you're dealing with humans, to whatever degree is that they understand it. It may not be so developed. But the point is Varnashram, then it's God's laws concerning everything. So four Varnas, four Ashrams. That way it covers all the mentalities that human beings have. You can say as, oh, it can't be applied nowadays, is that people are constantly trying to apply, all the karmis in the world are trying to apply Varnashram. right? But they're all trying in their own way, so it's not scientific. So it's that means you have groups of people that their whole thing is capitalism. That's the only thing that's important. So for them, government is only to support capitalism. Intellectuals are to support the capitalism, train people so they can be useful in that. And the common person then, does the office work and the physical work that's necessary for the business. So they see all these four, but everything's centered on capitalism, right? And then communism will take the same thing and center it all on the labor, the common person. That, they're working at a factory and there's a governance to see that it all goes on, and there's intellectuals that teach people how to do everything. But the center is the socialism, right? Then you're going to have those that it's all about the administration and all that, and that needs money. So we have the business guys. The business guys need the common person to work for them, and we need intellectuals to train people how they can be part of this whole thing, right? And then you have the intellectuals. It's that they think they teach, and then everybody else is taught by us, and then they can do all these things, and all the society can go on. So it's going on. It means to say that it's not there is just blindness, right? And those who have a little bit more of a, yes, if they're an atheistic background or don't like tradition or anything like that, they just want to, then maybe the ashram thing of that, when you're younger, you're unmarried, and so you focus on your studies, may not be so important to them. But then anyone with more of a religious background, then it's, yeah, the younger kids study and all that. And then once they've studied, then they get married and that. And then there's going to be a point of tired life. And there are those few that are like, the priests and monks and all that, and that's fine. So you could take anybody in any culture and discuss these eight principles, and they'll say yes. So the point is when you run them all together at the same time. So, how much can socialism, what's the benefits? How much, control does capitalism have? How much control does the administrator, or how much control do the intellectuals have? Or what things can the students do? What things can the family persons do? What things can the retired do? What things can the priests do? Right? So that kind of aspect is that there's, nowadays it's all overlapping, so it doesn't work very nicely. But you have the exact things and it works nice. Just like you want to cook cupcakes, each cupcake goes in its own little thing, and then you bake it. If you just kind of take a tray and pour it all in there and then say it's a cupcake, then no, it's just a cake, not a cupcake. They're trying to get cupcakes, so afterwards then they'll cut it up into pieces and that, and they get, things. So that's the problem. So you have Vaishyas running Kshatriya or Brahminical elements that they shouldn't be, right? Medicine is run by Brahmins. It's available to everyone. It's not expensive like that. It's for the person's benefit. Then it's nice. Everybody's satisfied. Everybody feels, good about that. But when Vaishyas run it, they try to squeeze as much money as they can out of everybody. And whether anybody gets healthy or not, they don't care. As long as they keep coming back and spending money, that's all they care about. So if people aren't getting healthy, so nobody's coming, then they'll let them become, they'll work to get them a little healthy so that they'll come back. But if they get too healthy and then they don't come back, then that's too much. So that's how Vaishyas work. So that's why they're not supposed to control Brahminical activities. They're not supposed to control education and make money off it. They're not supposed to control medicine and make money off it, law and make money off of it. That's because when they do, they completely destroy the society, because for them, making profit is all that's important. They don't mind if they destroy everything as long as they make profit off of it. If the whole world is destroyed and everybody's living in poverty, as long as they're in their fancy apartment, and have their helicopter to move around, they're fine. They don't feel bad that everybody else is poor and dying. They just care about their profit. So that's why these things have to be regulated. Or the people, oh, it's about the people and this. They don't care. They'll go, it's all about the people and everybody's equal, that you can't run business, you can't run government, you can't teach. So that's the thing, is each one, unless it knows where its limit is, it will go to the point, where it destroys everything. So Varnashram is the only thing where all these things, where socialism, capitalism, what do you call it, the monarchy and theocracy, can work together and not destroy each other and not destroy themselves. And then people will say, "Is oh, it's as in the past. You can't do that now." This is uneducated, untrained, individuals saying this, nothing less. Right, and nothing more. Is that that's they just have no idea what they're talking about. It'd be like people that don't know how to cook telling everybody else how to cook. It's like they have no idea what they're talking about. Oh, it's so an old archaic thing and all that. Cooking. We don't need cooking anymore like that, because you can just go to a restaurant and just order something and get something to eat. Why we should cook in our houses? We don't need cooking. Cooking's an old-fashioned thing, but they have no idea that people are cooking in the restaurant. No idea. So that's the problem that what we're dealing with, is that Varnashram is the symptom of human life. That they're trying for some aspect of it. You see is that there's aspects of it, so, but they're generally doing it only because of the benefits they get, so only because of passion. So the Vedic system is that you're following Varnashram in goodness because it's something you're supposed to do. That gives the best result. You follow in passion, then it starts to get a little bit mixed up because the greed comes up and envy and all these things. And if it's done in ignorance, where right is wrong and wrong is right, they just destroy society. And then you'll just end up with tribals. You just go out and, in the jungle and what they do, then that goes on, You get too many people and you get too strong and you go and fight with everybody else. And then in the wars, you kill all your people. Then you go back to your place and be more peaceful. So it just goes back and forth, back and forth. So it's just, it's just animal life. So say what people can say what they want. But the point is Varnashram is the scientific social structure for human beings. And if people would just try to study and understand it, then, if people had spent the last 50 years trying to understand Daivavarnashram, because we're not interested in Varnashram, we're interested in Daivavarnashram. So how much of the Varnashram system is recommended to use in Krishna service? Because bhakti doesn't need it, right? Bhakti is independent. So therefore, we use how much the acharyas use. What they recommend, what they say, that's how much. Because there's so much more. It gets down to such detail and covers everything that all mentalities and everything can be covered. So, how much is necessary for us? Outside might be Varnashram, but within the society, it's Daiva Varnashram. But, if Varnashram is going on, it generally makes it a more pleasant environment for the Daiva Varnashram, though they don't necessarily understand God consciousness. Not at least in a very scientific way. So that's the point, is human life begins there. And if not, then it's subhuman, but it's just like polished animals. Like you see ants or bees or termites, they live in huge colonies, sometimes millions. I think bees, there's 10,000 or so. Ants, I'm not sure how many is in a colony like that. Can be huge amounts, way more than, maybe 100,000 or so. But termites can have millions, And so they're running very nice thing. Termites have great architecture, air conditioning, high-rise buildings. That they live in, and they have their queen, and they have their whole hierarchy, and it's running very smoothly. Everything's going on. So, they're just more sophisticated, like that. So they care about those things. So since human life is just, not doing much better than that if it's not following the Vedic system. Say what they want, but that's the reality. Say what you want. Oh no, but it's going on fine, is it? So that's the point, is because it's Krishna's laws. You don't follow Krishna's laws, there'll always be a problem. You follow Krishna's laws, there'll be the minimal amount of problem, but there'll always be problem because you're in the material world. It'll never be perfect. So it's real perfection is devotional service. That's why the Daimavarna Ashram, because that's the perfect religious support for pure devotional service. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very much. Thank you. Thank you, Maharaj. It comes much more clear.
Yes. It's a simple thing. It's just that we complicate it because we don't know what it is. If we understand what it is, because Prabhupada and Krishna are talking about this, the acharyas are talking about it, so it must be something important. So then we look into what do they say, try to understand what it's there. So they're talking Daiva Varnashram means how does it connect to Krishna? That's the Daiva part. Varnashram simply means following Krishna's laws, governing, occupation and status of situation and stages of life. So what stage of life you're at and what social occupation you're doing, that's all it defines. But now how to do that for Krishna, that's Daiva Varnashram. And the process of pleasing Krishna, that's bhakti. So basically when Varnashram is used to please Krishna, then that package is devotional service, and that shows the devotional service with Daiva Varnashram. That's all. So in Daiva Varnashram, you don't need as much detail as you do in Varnashram. Because you know what it's for, so you can get the work done, and you don't need all the extra things that are not necessary. That's why certain things we don't worry about in the Varnashram, but certain things we do. So that there's certain things we don't worry about doesn't mean you throw out the whole thing. It means those parts you don't. It's just like in a kitchen. There's so many pots, pans, and utensils and all that. Then you figure out which ones I actually need, and you keep those, and all the rest of them, if they go, it doesn't matter. Right? Because you just use what you need. Or they may be all sitting there. You clean them, pack them up nicely. And now and again, let's say, okay, you have some extra people come over, so you need a few bigger pots. You don't use them on a daily basis, but you have them there. So when they come, you get out the big pots and you cook like that. And then you have a program, and then after everyone leaves, you wash those pots and then put them away again. So that's the thing, is that the Daiva Varnashram, we have the basis that we always use, but then in certain situations, there's certain other elements that we might use more of. But it's not our standard thing. But still, it's still based on it's being done for Krishna. Just the situation, okay, we'd use something that's here that we generally wouldn't use. Like that. Does that make sense? It's just like there is marriage. So then Daiva Varnashram, the marriage is about devotees marrying to serve Krishna. But then let's say in your family, some relative is getting married, some cousin or something like that. And you go to there, they're not getting married to do any service for Krishna and all that, but still the principle is there, that marriage is there. So because they're following that, then they can appreciate marriage and Krishna consciousness. But if they're not getting married and you are, and devotees are getting married in Krishna consciousness, then they go, well, what do you need to get married? What's that for? So that's the point, is that it has means what is in Daiva Varnashram, then for those who are not devotees, then they just have the Varnashram. They don't connect it to Krishna. But it's connectable to Krishna. So just by training, then you learn how to connect, just like cooking. Cooking is a devotee or no, cooking is a karmi. The mechanics are the same. It's just now is, well, what features and what is Krishna like and how to put it together? You might make some adjustments on your ingredients, so some ingredients drop off. Like that, and you're careful about certain things and this and that, because that Krishna likes things in this way, or Ayurveda mentions certain things, and so then you follow like that. But the actual mechanical techniques are the same. The cooking is cooking, just like driving is driving. Now, if you're driving a car or driving a truck or driving one of those big, huge things with, 18 or 22 wheels, there's some slight difference in technique, but still the principle is the same. So it's just a matter of appreciating what you're dealing with. But otherwise, they just say, oh, we're not this body. And so, yeah, what has that got to do with it? You're not your car, but you drive the car. If I say I'm not the body, I so therefore I don't have to follow Varnashram, because the body has a nature and the mind has a nature. Then the car has a nature. I'm not my car, so we don't drive cars. I'm not my house, so we don't live in a house. I'm not my clothes, we don't use clothes. How is that logical? How is that intelligent? It's just said because then it's something I don't want to deal with or can't understand. I can just brush aside. Feeling very confident about myself that yes, I'm doing the right thing and everybody else is wrong. But in actuality, it's just untrained foolishness. Since when does I'm not this body mean you don't use Varnashram? It means Varnashram is meant for those people who know they're not this body. Right? They don't follow Varnashram. What are they doing? They're following the culture of the people that actually think they're this body. Oh, we're Westerners. That means they think they're their body. But the Vedic system is I'm not this body. But my body has a nature. Therefore, I use it according to the nature. Like this. I'm not this. But this thing I use to tell time. Right? This. I'm not this either. But this I use to keep my ear thingies, in. Like that. I'm not this. But I use it as a case for my phone. So this thing of that we make no distinction and all this, and it's all impersonalism. It's just philosophy. It's just impersonalism, Buddhism. Hence, nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatyadesha tarane. Srila Prabhupada is going and removing this. So if people are very no. We're Westerners, we're impersonalists and voidists. This is our culture. Then, yeah, you can stay in that culture, but then don't tell the devotees that that's what they should do. You want to do that? Hey, go for it. But don't tell others they should do it when they're going to a higher level. Then you want to say, my misunderstanding of the philosophy, and its impersonalism is as good as pure devotion. It says, then that's even worse. I'm attached to these things. I do these things. What can I do? It happens. But if you're going to say, no, we're just as good. In fact, we're better because we're honest. And no, you're not honest. You're not this body. Why are you saying you're honest? Right? You're not the body, and then saying we're Westerners. Oh, and why don't we follow Varnashram? Oh, because we're not this body. So we're not this body, we don't follow Varnashram, but we're Westerners, therefore we follow Western culture, so we are the body. How is that logical on any level? How is that intelligent? But that's Maya. Maya is very clever. She tricks us. That's what she's good at. Maya is good at giving tricks. As one kid used to say, tricky stuff. You do something, play a game with them, and they figure it out and go, ah, this is tricky stuff. So that's what Maya does. If you hear from Guru Sadhana and Shastra, you can figure out the tricks. And if you don't, you'll think that it's reality. So, yes.
Yeah, thank
Okay,
you.
very good. Kranitai. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.